Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the May 10 edition of Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason, and we're joined by our panelists today, including Dan Secunder. He's a DC analyst out of Chicago, Illinois. Bill Gentry from Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. Kurt Kimmel joins us from Normal, Illinois, and Bates Commodities. And Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets out of Elkhorn, Nebraska. Commodity Week, of course, a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online and listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. Now, Dan Secunder, you're new to the show. Tell me a little bit about yourself and DC analysis first, and then we'll get a list of items from you we should discuss.
Well, I've been a grain analyst for many years, and I have my own shop now. So I do grain market analysis on corn, soybean complex, and wheat. And I also grew up near Champaign, Illinois, so I have farming interests in that area.
And where did you grow up?
Just right between Pisotum and Sidoras, about 15 miles southwest of Champaign.
Oh, well, you are nearby, so the listening audience on the radio will understand, a lot of them will understand exactly where you're from. What should we talk about today, speaking of on the radio?
Well, I guess to start with the USDA's S&D, and certainly, you know, their lower than expected world corn, soybean, and wheat carryout estimates for 2018. Have generated a lot of discussion here. You know, with the world corn carryout down 35 million tons, bean carryout down 5.5 million tons, and wheat carryout down 6.2 million tons. So, you know, it's just an underlying factor that's supportive for the market. So I think that's one thing of interest. And of course, other topics that are on the front burner, of course, the U.S.-China trade negotiations and, you know, what that's done to Chinese soybean demand, you know, for U.S. soybeans, and, you know, it stopped their shipments, basically, and their purchases. So that's a topic that's of importance.
Bill Gentry, some items that you might want to add to that list?
Well, I think one of the things, too, is that we saw the carryout numbers go down, but I also am impressed with the stocks-to-use ratios. That's something we've been watching with a lot more for the last couple of years. Stocks to use worldwide went down a couple, 3 points or tenths of a point. And year over year, next year, we're going to see a sizable reduction in that. So I think that that's important for the corn market. It probably sets the stage for more buoyant price activity going into the summer. And I'm already hearing some guys talking about the dryness and the weather. So it could be a concern sooner rather than later. Timing-wise, I think it's probably a couple weeks premature, but we'll have to watch the funds and see how they want to address it.
And Kurt Kimmel, any other items?
No, boy, there's a whole bunch right there. Those are all good items we need to dig into a little bit, because it is a game changer when you look longer term from here on out. Definitely volatility is going to pick up as we go into the growing season. And maybe what if? We've got the benchmarks now to go off of. What if yield goes up? What if yield goes down? And what if we do see a little acreage shift amongst the commodities, too? So got a lot to cover here, Todd.
Hey, Elaine Cubb, I don't know whether there are any other items you have on your list, but because we mentioned dry weather, and I know that in our part of the world, there are places that are very dry, but up where you are, you're still thinking about trying to maybe get a crop in that northwestern part of the Corn Belt, and it's been cool and wet. What other items, if you've got any on your list that you want to talk about, or we can go straight into what the planting season looks like there?
Yeah, so we can do both. There is some drought concern in the Western Corn Belt. There's some drought concern for the second crop of Brazil's corn crop. But, you know, there's an entire Northern Hemisphere of production, so I think it's important for us not to forget about what's going on in Russia and Ukraine, their wheat production, but most of all, what's going on for China's corn and soybean planting, especially if we're in a scenario this marketing year where they are not going to come onto the global market or not coming to the U.S. export market as much as they usually do. It will be increasingly important for global grain benchmark prices how well they can meet their own demand. And right now, it's looking like their farmers are favoring corn acreage over soybean acreage. So that, I think, played into some of the USDA's projections here in today's report, suggesting that, you know, protein meal, soybean meal, and soy oil consumption, the demand driver of it is really, that global demand driver is really the thing that's driving the strength in those prices, or likely to continue to do that through this marketing year.
I take it one of the places that you picked that up from was the USDA executive summary and the look at the crops that China is expected to produce in the acreage for this year. I did make note that the official number from China, as Reuters reported it in the last 24 or 48 hours, showed about 8% more soybean acres, but USDA said they're just going to be flat this year. So I suppose it's one way or the
other. The thought going into this was the price ratios from their own futures contracts or their own domestic markets greatly favored planting corn, despite the government's ideas of building in subsidies for soybeans. So I think it is likely they're going to have more corn acres at the loss of soybean acres, which means their demand for soybeans is going to be super important in this 2018-19 marketing year.
Yeah, so we'll be looking for those. You mentioned in Sikander, the China trade negotiations. It appears that China probably will need more soybeans because the market is telling their farmers to plant more corn, and at least USDA thinks that's going to happen. How did the negotiations play into this, into the larger scheme?
Well, the one thing I would say about, you know, the China demand just as of late here, you know, I see the commercial guys, you know, really starting to question, you know, what is their total, you know, level of bean demand. And you see, you know, their imports, you know, the last 3 months have been, you know, below year ago levels. So people are starting to question USDA's 97 million ton number a little bit, you know, for this marketing year 17-18. And then they're also starting to question the 18-19, you know, the numbers that came out today, USDA's at 103. So that's up 6 million tons from here. And I don't know if it's politics or not, but, you know, the Chinese ag minister, I saw this morning, they're actually forecasting like a 0.3% decline in China's imports, you know, the first time in years that they would actually have a decline. Now, that would be a shocker if that were correct. So there's starting to be a real difference of opinion. And, you know, just what is China's demand? I think their hog prices have been under, you know, some pressure. You know, they've built a lot of these new, you know, large, you know, efficient facilities, and, you know, it is possible that, you know, they're kind of overproducing, at least here in the short run on the hog side, and, you know, squeezing their margins. So just a lot of things to watch in that regard.
Hey, Bill Gentry, on that note, USDA raised the export number for soybeans year over year by 225 million bushels. Now, I suppose that some of that could be on expectations that the United States will pick up some of the Argentine shortfall. However, the South American crop in total, I think, was larger than it was last year for all nations there. So how do you justify that 225 million? And I know you're not USDA, but somebody's got to tell us why that number's so big.
Well, I have a tough time justifying it, but I just take the number as stated. And I think one of the things, too, to keep in mind is the meal demand is projected to be higher. And that's a little bit of a better demand scenario going forward. And that's obviously because South American production for meal is reduced. So I think going forward, there's probably some product mix in there that's kind of working into it. And I think basically they're making just optimistic assumptions, just like they usually do.
Kurt Kimmel, any things from the soybean supply and demand table that we haven't picked up yet that you want to make sure we talk about? I know the average market price sets right at $10 for the midpoint.
You just got to believe in Trump. He's going to come through for you on that export news there, John. I can't believe you do not believe. You got to believe.
I have faith.
But that 2.29, that's a record export estimate. So we've got to make sure we don't lose the Chinese business because, you know, that's a huge part of it. And we need to make sure that these other traditional buyers stay intact. Because you start backing off on that demand side, then you start adding to the bottom line. So that's yet to be proven. see if that demand's there as we move down the road. Also, to acreage, you know, we're looking at a million less acres than what the trade was dialed into. So we'll see how this acreage unfolds here. But we have a benchmark to go from using a 48.5 bushel yield. That's probably way too low. These guys got in early. The reason they plant beans before corn in some areas, they thought they could achieve 100 bushels to acre on beans. So, you know, if the weather cooperates, this bean yield probably needs to go up if this early bean planting unfolds the way they expect it to. But a lot of moving parts in through here. We're going to have ample supplies of beans next year. As you look at the supply-demand balance sheet, so I think we need to stay focused here as a producer and take advantage of some up moves here as we go through the growing season.
Elaine, did the reaction in Chicago to the USDA report, in particular for the soybeans, because the ending stocks were, I don't know, about 100 million bushels less than the trade really was expecting, so they were in that 500 and above range, but finished up for the new crop at least at 415 million bushels. Did that seem muted to you?
No, it was really the only reaction there was. Corn didn't have anything to speak of. And that 415 million bushels, it was within the range of estimates. I don't remember who it was, but there was at least one estimate that was lower than that at 400 million bushels. So perhaps it wasn't, you know, a huge surprise. And obviously the market then backed off after that double-digit bump up. But like I mentioned before, I think it was just the scale of the demand that this is not just a Argentine shortage story or the carryover story from 17 into 18, that this is a longer-term or more sustainable demand story.
Tell me about planting in your region. How far along do you believe they are? And how far along have they come since the Sunday USDA crop weekly crop progress report was taken?
Yeah, I was going to say that given the weather this week and given, you know, any previous concern about switching acreage, I think it's time to put that aside, because last year at this exact same time, we were in the same scenario where things got a little bit slow of a start. But then it was this week, this second week of May, where actually 26% of the 2017 corn crop was planted. So it can get done. I think it'll get done. And the acreage switching is unlikely to happen, especially now that the soybean to corn price ratio has fallen off. And even though the crop insurance prices are already set, there is no longer that incentive to switch into soybeans.
The cold temperatures won't bother anybody, I know, but the wet field conditions, are they truly wet in parts of the Northwest?
Sure, some parts, but some parts are dry. So, you know, I was just looking at a map that showed the overlap of the droughty areas, considering where the corn acres are actually planted. And there is considerable overlap in Kansas, Nebraska, even into, you know, south central Iowa. There are areas where it's too dry. So, I don't worry about on a nationwide scenario of that wet weather or localized wet weather actually drawing back the overall planting progress.
So now I'd like to get from each of you at this point a feel for where you are today on the marketplace and whether this has changed your friendly, neutral, bullish, bearish outlook because of the USDA figures released in the supply and demand estimates. So Dan, where were you to begin with on corn in particular, and did that change at all today?
I wouldn't say we've really changed anything because, you know, the USDA's, you know, came down to 87 million tons for, you know, Brazil's production, and that seemed reasonable. I actually thought they would go a little higher on new crop exports than 2,100. I thought that one might warrant more like a 2,200 number and give you a little bit lower carryout than they were looking for. But, you know, my suspicion is we just maintain kind of a high-level trading range here in corn, you know, pending, you know, U.S. and world weather developments here.
Hey, Kurt, you used the term today could be a game changer longer term. What did that mean?
Well, confirmation. We talked about game changer for the last couple of months. In fact, you know, if you go clear back last winter, things could fall into place here. You know, talking 450 corn, possibly during the growing season. But now, That might seem a little cheap. Some of the advisory services looking at this carry out at 1.6. You shave a few bushels off, you're down to 1.3 billion bushel carry out, and some can swing this thing up to $5. But the game changer or confirmation, as Dan started out at the very beginning, and there's the world ending stocks on corn. You know, we were building ample supplies of world corn stocks from 2010 until just a year or two ago. We had 230 million metric tons of corn sitting around on the world market. Now, if you look at today's world corn ending stocks projected out to 2018, we're approaching 150 million bushel or 150 million metric ton carryout estimate. So we're getting down to levels in through here that, you know, some weather problems, not only here in the U.S., but in China and some of the other growing regions, we can bring in some pretty good speculative buying and end-user buying. We've built a huge, huge demand base over the last few years, and that demand base is just not going to go away. It could slow down, but that demand base is just not going to disappear here at this $4 level.
In your opinion, Kurt, and I'll stay with you for just a second, did the new crop numbers today, world and domestic, both give more impetus to an upside potential for the corn than it did the soybean market?
Well, I don't know if it opens up the gates to the upside, but it suggests that if you're an end user or a buyer, that this market should be supported on pullbacks in through here as they step up to gather some coverage here as we go into the new marketing year. So I think it confirms we've got some base belts in through here, and that if you're an end user, you're probably a little bit more concerned about gathering some inventory here as we look forward. There's still ample old crop supplies around. Basis is still wide in some areas. But as they project forward in through here, I believe the trade's going to be wanting to accumulate some inventory.
Bill Gentry, did anything change at Risk Management Commodities today because of the report?
No, I don't think so. But I do think that the report did solidify ideas that we've got a lows of consequence for an extended period of time in place. And it's also given us an opportunity to look at the summer weather markets with a little bit more conviction. So I think with the volatility being as low as it is in the options market, this is an opportunity, especially if we get a little bit further dip here, to maybe get some summer month calls bought to protect some of the cash sales we've made already. Because I think right now the upside is probably more significant than the downside for the next few months. So we're cautiously optimistic that we'll get a better opportunity to finish our selling.
Well, Elaine Cupp, I think I have to come to you because, of course, you're the next one in line, but that summer weather line that Bill just uttered probably is perfect for you as you wanted to talk about second crop corn in Brazil and drought areas in the United States.
Yeah, you know, I think he just convinced me. I was about to say that I didn't think there was really much upside. We saw that new crop December corn contract unable to really find buyers for any extended length of time today above that 422 that it already tested earlier this week based on that Brazilian story. I think the Brazilian story is done, the report is over, and there's, you know, nothing going on, let's say, for the next few days that is going to push it higher. But you're absolutely right that when we get into summer, if this drought expands or continues, or if there is any other sort of a weather problem, that is absolutely the seasonal time frame when you do seem to see rallies.
Okay, so now I want to come down to the potential for pricing out both corn and soybeans under these scenarios. So we're looking into June and July. Probably and almost always there will be a weather market at some time. Given your current positions in the marketplace, are you capable of adding or wanting to add sales during that particular time frame? And I'll ask you first, Elaine Cupp.
I'm only about 20% sold at this point. So actually, I have been looking at this run up in corn as an opportunity to get some more sold. And I still do feel that way, not heavily, because as we've just been talking about, I believe in the potential for a summer rally. But I think it would be appropriate to be more sold than 20%.
Dan Secunder?
I'm like a third sold right here. And I think there's limits, since there's kind of limited downside here until we see what's going to happen with the weather. You know, let's see if we can make a run at 450 or some kind of higher prices, and we get some sales at higher prices.
Kurt Kimmel?
Yeah, we like being this 20-30% forward price, we like to be a scale-up seller here, have some orders above the marketplace. We don't recommend getting over 50% priced ahead of 4th of July until we get comfortable with some production numbers. But to take it a more aggressive approach to have your cake and eat it at the same time, we've been looking at establishing $4 price floors. That way, if the weather cooperates and we stall out here and go lower, at least you've got some downside protection. But yet, on the other hand, if we do run into some weather concerns and move higher, you still have the opportunity to move cash grain higher and don't have to worry about selling too low. So I think the number one strategy is to establish a price floor here and kind of set back and see what happens. And for those who need some cash flow and so forth, you can move the cash grain, clean up old grain, and then replace with some call options. Because as Bill said here, if this market cools down a little bit and option volatility backs off a little bit, it'd be a good time to gain some of that ownership, because volatility will pick up here if we do see some weather forecast turn adverse.
Oh, I like your positive attitude that you can have your cake and eat it as well. How about you, Bill?
I'll bring the ice cream, too.
And risk management commodities, where do you stand?
Yeah, we've got a lot of guys in the 30 to 50% sold, both in corn and beans in cash markets. I think going forward, I'm going to be a lot more interested in using some put options in that weather scenario if we get a rally of consequence. And I also think, too, as I said earlier, if we are the 30 to 50% sold, this is a fine time to look at maybe some re-ownership strategies, especially if we can get a little bit further pullback here.
Elaine, the other numbers that were released today, we haven't talked about wheat yet. Was there anything in this report for producers to hang their hat on?
Not necessarily. I think the only chance for wheat is some sort of weather problem in Canada, perhaps, or like I mentioned, Russia or Ukraine. And at this point, that's not happening. Just looking at the ending stocks projections here, you're going from above 1 billion bushels in the 17-18 marketing year to slightly less than 1 billion bushels in the 18-19 marketing year. So that's not enough to build some bullish story, no.
Have you been watching those numbers, Will? Well, Bill Gentry, I'm almost positive that's the case.
Yeah, I have. And the other thing, too, that I think is very significant is the fact that we've missed the USDA's expectations for, I believe, the last 12 weeks on our export sales. So I think realistically, I was hoping to see a number below a billion bushels, but I definitely didn't expect it. I like to see the one on the horizon at 955 is reasonably encouraging longer term. And I'll just cross my fingers and hope that the wheat market can regain its composure and lead us out of the hole.
Well, Kurt Kimmel, I was going to ask that question of you, because oftentimes people would like wheat to lead the grains and the oil seeds higher, particularly the grains. Is it stumbling at this point?
Well, it might be in a pause session. We'll have to listen to Mike's commentary tomorrow on Friday afternoon. Mike's been on this wheat leadership kick for quite some time. But we're seeing a situation where Australia is not having the greatest weather forecast as they start to move through their season in through here. Both the Black Sea growing regions is showing some little bit of weather concern. I know weather can change and so forth, but wheat's been the victim of the short side of the spread. The trade's been buying corn, selling wheat, buying beans and selling wheat on the spread. So even though we have ample world supplies at this time, if we continue to see some adverse weather conditions, it will quickly turn to the buy side.
I would just say, like our weather guy, he believes that like about one third of, you know, South Russia is going to remain dry. I know there's some rain, you know, in the forecast here, but I think that is a question mark. I think there's parts of East and West Australia that are question marks. So, you know, and I'm still not convinced exactly what we're going to get out of that southwestern corner of our hard wheat area, you know, from, you know, the area that's been most dry. You know, some of the guys that were on that wheat tour, you know, saw wheat that looked greener than they expected, but they also saw some brown heads developing there. So let's just see how that plays out. So I don't know, wheat market, I think it's still a trading affair here. Just we'll see what happens with world weather.
Let's wrap up now. Elaine Cubb, I think I'll get a final word from you, please.
Well, as always, I like to remind folks to keep watching the outside markets. The dollar keeps climbing, and crude oil too is starting to get high enough that you might start spooking the overall economy. So just keep an eye on that.
Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities.
Yeah, I'd like to echo a little bit what Bill said there. This volatility, I believe this volatility is going to pick up here, especially if this weather forecast starts to change. The commodity funds are looking for a story, and they've been kind of quiet for the most part in the corn market. They've been heavily long beans for some time in through here. But there's a story developing here, and there's a market on its way.
Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities.
Yeah, continuing on the topic of funds, I think it's real important that in the last Commitment to Treasury report, they had reduced their short position in wheat significantly. They've probably gone back onto it a little bit, but I think longer term, they were relatively significantly short for an extended period of time, I think almost a year and a half. And I think by last month or Friday's numbers, they were only short about 20,000 contracts. So that's pretty encouraging to me that maybe the tide has turned for them, but we'll have to watch and see. That's one of my favorite Friday afternoon activities is looking at that COT report.
Oh, well, that's not one of my favorite Friday afternoon. And Dan Seconder from DC Analysis, your last word.
I would just say that, you know, with the huge decline that we've seen in Argentine corn and bean production, a significant decline in Brazil safrinha production, you know, it just puts us in a better position here to have a constructive outlook, especially on corn here. And just one other brief thing, you know, we've taken, you know, the U.S.-China trade negotiations, everything has been bearish, and certainly it has been a bearish influence with China, you know, not buying U.S. beans and not shipping them. But I will say, you know, that there is a possibility that some positive things could come out of that. You know, if there's true negotiations, if there's true progress in that, you know, what if China removes import tariffs on ethanol? What if they remove import tariffs on DDG? You know, what if they become an aggressive buyer, you know, back in the bean market? You know, there could be some very positive developments that happen overnight here. Maybe that's wishful thinking, but I think it's a possibility.
Dan Seconder, of course, is with DC Analysis. He's out of Chicago, Illinois. Bill Gentry from Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. And Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Lane Cubb is from Mastering the Grain Markets out of Elkhorn, Nebraska. You've been listening to Commodity Week from Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at WILLAG.org. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.